Singer-songwriter Stephen Stanley joins The Antidote for a talk. Stephen, this is a huge pleasure.
Dave, thank you so much for having me.
You got to tell me, has making music always been a passion of yours?
Yes. I mean, as long as I can remember, I was in a jet ski accident when I was 9 and lost hearing in my left ear. Mm. And because I was so young, my inner ears were off. So I had a lot of trouble walking and playing outside. So my mom, instead of putting me in front of some video games or something, she taught me how to play guitar. And then I just haven't stopped since then. I'm 30 now, just turned 30. So yeah.
Oh, as old as all that. That was something I was going to ask about. And here, I'm going to tie it into a song. Heal was one of your early ones, and it's found on your debut self-titled.
Yes.
So now, I do know that the song is speaking about spiritual healing, but with you mentioning how you're also deaf in one ear, what about physical healing? Should we always expect that from God?
So that song really, if I remember, it's been a long time since I've even thought about that song, but I wrote it. I found out a very close family member was sick. That song really was about physical healing, at least for the most part. Mm. And I remember we were trying to tie it to like a spiritual healing as well. And then I remember the guy I wrote it with, his mother had passed away from cancer a few years before. So he was also writing about that, just, you know, watching his mother pass away and, you know, the things that he would have said to her. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's crazy. You bring that one up. That's awesome.
I also want to get into other old stuff. And it's not like I'm trying to ignore your latest EP Change, but I do want to talk about some of those earlier ones. Now, I'm angry with you because I went for the longest hunt to find Rhythm, your very first song. Whoa. I couldn't find it anywhere. So what is it? Do you make your oldest songs disappear?
How do you know about that song? That's hilarious.
I do research.
Oh my gosh. So that song, I remember I had worked with a producer early on when I was like 16, and it was just a really bad situation. He ended up like taking money from me, and it was this whole mess and crazy. 16 years, I was like cleaning houses, and I sold some guitars that I had just to like, you know, pay for this music that I was going to work with this producer. And after it all went away, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do it myself, and I'm going to get some friends together. And there's this studio called 1971 Sounds in Atlanta, which is where I really cut my teeth and learned how a studio works and how songwriting works. And Rhythm was my first song, like going into the studio with a band and just figuring it out. And I remember that was really the first song I wrote. Like once I got married, me and my wife got married at 20. And that was the first song I wrote. I was like, we're going to do it. And in 2020, I ended up signing a record deal. And part of that was any music out I needed to go ahead and take down. So that's where Rhythm went. So I had to take Rhythm down. And who knows, maybe that song will come back at some point. But that's, dude, I never thought anybody would ask me about Rhythm. That's insane.
So what was it with signing with Capitol Christian Music Group? You didn't want to stay independent. You wanted to get signed to a label.
I think at that time, like now, if you're an independent artist, I think it's doable. In 2019, that really wasn't a thing. Like there were indie artists, but there weren't indie artists doing what they're doing now. Like nowhere near to the success of someone like, Forrest Frank comes to mind as someone who went into independent. But at that time, I was from a small town. I didn't have any connections really in the music industry, just one producer. And you know, Capitol came to hear me play, heard some songs, and we didn't know anybody, dude. We didn't have any money either. So there, with Capitol Music is coming and saying, hey, we want to sign you. It's like, oh my gosh, how is this happening? But indie music now too, like a few months after I signed, I started blowing up on TikTok but it's much more achievable, I think, now.
Talk about blowing up. Yeah, you've had huge success, really right from the start. You've got 3 Dove Awards, one for the song Whatever It Takes, and in both 2024 and 2025, Stephen Stanley won Album of the Year awards.
Yeah, Rock Album of the Year, that's right.
That's wild. Do you intimidate other artists?
No, not at all. No, absolutely not. I can't say who the tour is, but I'm about to go on a tour with a friend of mine later this year, and very excited for that. It's going to be fun.
Well, here's something else. Are winning awards important to you?
I think I talked to my mom about this, and what she said, I agree with. When I signed the record deal, she was able to go, okay, I'm not delusional. Like every mom thinks their son is good, you know. I think I'd be lying to say, no, it doesn't mean anything. Like, I don't really care about that kind of stuff. But it is nice to go, okay, I'm doing something right. Like, I'm not doing everything wrong. Because most of the time, 99% of the time you're in the music industry, you just feel like you're doing everything wrong. But it was cool. It was an honor, to be honest. Yeah.
And you see, your mom was right. She always said you were wonderful. She nailed it.
Right.
So since the song Whatever It Takes won an award, you and I should talk about it.
Yeah, let's talk about Whatever It Takes.
The opening verse says, "It's hard for me to believe that I've got nothing to prove. I thought this dirt on my hands was going to keep me from you." You capitalized, so we know who it's addressing. It's that "I've got nothing to prove" line. Aren't you wanting to prove something to yourself by becoming a success? Besides, you know, honoring mom.
There is, there's definitely a dual meaning in Whatever It Takes. I wanted to write a song for somebody that felt like they were too far gone and they had zero self-worth and didn't feel like they were worthy of a relationship with God or to walk into a church. I remember I talked about that a lot during that time, but at the same time, I was feeling that way. I was feeling like I always constantly had something to prove, not in a spiritual way, just like in the world. You know, the music industry has a great way of exposing all the things you don't like about yourself. And I was feeling pretty, pretty down at that moment, I would say. There was a lot of, you know, criticism from the suits and, you know, a lot of people around me. It was just, I felt like constantly I was getting discouraged. I even called a friend of mine, Darren Mulligan from We Are Messengers, if you've ever heard of them.
Sure.
Darren's like, I consider him like one of my mentors, but I called him up and I was just telling him, you know, what I was going through. I don't remember exactly what I told him, but I'm not going to do an Irish accent, but he's like, "Oh, buddy, you've been through it. Like, you've been punched basically and knocked down." I was like, yeah. Within that couple of days, that's when I wrote like the final version of Whatever It Takes and what it ended up being. But yeah. And then the chorus goes into it and it's just saying, self-hatred, especially if you have, you know, a relationship with God and the Holy Spirit inside of you, you shouldn't hate yourself. That's reckless. You know, Jesus calls hatred murder. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's what the reckless line means, is that hating yourself and having no self-worth is just a reckless and really depressing way to live life.
Isn't it sad, though, that the music industry can also beat you down?
Oh, yeah. It's just the way it is sometimes. You know, a lot of things I went through then are, you know, helping me with the things I'm going through now. So I think God lets us go through stuff to sharpen us and get through it so we can get to the other side and handle the next challenge. Because, you know, the stuff I'm dealing with now, I couldn't deal with if I hadn't gone through the stuff I've gone through previously.
Something about your music is that it usually gets labeled as being CCM, but really it's more of a cross of rock and pop. But do you care about the labels?
We've actually been having this conversation. The music I'm working on now for a third album is straight up rock music. You know, I'm a huge fan of Nirvana, and I love the way that he wrote these pop melodies with this, you know, grunge music. the songs themselves still have hooks and melody, but the music is a couple guitars, a bass, and drums. Like that's what the new music is. And CCM or Christian music, it's not a genre. It's like its own category with multiple genres within it.
True.
Like Christian music, the only type of music that has that, where you've got bluegrass Christian and hip hop Christian and then pop Christian or worship. And then it's got all these things just under this umbrella. So we're kind of like figuring out, okay, what do we do? Do we just call it rock music? But I don't want to be the guy that goes, oh, don't call me a Christian artist, because that's what I am. I'm a Christian who makes music, and all of the songs are about life stuff, but it's all in the context of my faith in God. So yeah, it's CCM. I don't know. I think I started more CCM early on, and then I sort of moved over to wanting to make rock music, which is what I've always wanted to do.
And that's why you're here talking to me. You have no idea how few CCM artists have come onto the show.
Okay. That's funny.
Something else that's interesting is that your songs can be challenging, which again is out of the norm for CCM. The song The Heat says, sometimes I feel like a desert stone, like I'm praying for rain, but the sky never opens. Sometimes I can feel it in my bones, like I could burst into flames at about any moment. You got to tell me, isn't it easy to feel distant from God?
Oh, yeah, especially when I wrote that. I'll just be straight up honest with you, too. Like, when I say early on in my career, the CCM, you know, label, it kind of goes into that. I had been doing some songwrites, and a lot of it was really just not the music I wanted to be writing. And I was in rooms with people, and everybody's kind of trying to figure out, you know, which way I was going to go and how I was going to sound. And I was pretty bummed about this writing trip. Mm-hmm. And then I met this guy, Paul Duncan, who I wrote The Heat with. And I walked in the room and I was like, hey, I know everybody wants like a radio song or a big hit or whatever, but can we just write a song? Like, I just want to write a good song today. Like, I don't want to worry about what it's for or, you know, who it's for. I want to write a song that's just what I'm going through right now. And at that time, I was going through the worst mental health thing I've ever gone through. There was a moment where I was having just really dark thoughts. I wasn't suicidal, but I was having these thoughts that would pop into my head, and told my wife immediately and started talking to a counselor. But I ended up writing around 300 songs in this time.
Oh, man, that's crazy.
And The Heat was one of them. And I had like a verse and a chorus, and I brought it to Paul and Ted, and we wrote that. And that was just like in the thick of it, you know, when we wrote that one, for sure.
Wow. There's one thing in particular that makes the songs of Stephen Stanley stand out from the crowd, and that's the cinematic flavor you deliver on many of your songs. Like what you hear on the title track from Trustfall. Mm-hmm. So here's something you should consider. What about scoring a film? And that's not a joke.
I actually was going to this year. A friend of mine made an indie film, which is crazy. All the these movies now being made by YouTubers and stuff, you know, getting into theaters. He's one of those type guys who started on YouTube. But I was going to score it. And I started, like, I got like 3 weeks in and I was like, dude, I don't know if I can do this. Like, it was cool to learn and how that stuff works, but it is like a workload. That's for sure. So like being a full-time artist and then scoring a film was like, you know, cause at the same time I was writing and making this album I'm working on. So right. It just wasn't going to work, but I would love to do that one day. That would be a lot of fun.
Have you ever been one of those guys to sit in a movie theater and analyze the music that's playing in a film?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I went, a good friend of mine, another mentor, Tommy Prophet. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But we went to see a movie the other night and watching the trailers, and we were, you know, analyzing just the music in the trailers, and then I'll talk to him all the time. But we saw Dune Part 2 as well, which like the music in that is incredible. But constantly doing that. I listen to movie scores. when I'm driving down the road. Like, I love doing it.
That's awesome. We've been talking about you spending all this time in the studio making music. What about being on the road? Do you have a preference for being in the studio versus performing?
Oof. My favorite part of being in music is the making of the music. So I would say being in the studio is probably my favorite thing, but very close second is going on tour. The tour for for Trust Fall, my second album last year, first headline tour, and that was awesome. And then I just did a tour with this band called Ashes Remain.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Over the past couple months. I love it. I mean, we're making music. We're just making it on stage. So it's still fun. I mean, the road's grueling too, especially the kind of touring I'm doing right now, which is like rock and roll clubs. But I love it. That's the stuff. I love it.
It sounds like you're really under a grind, producing constantly. How do you and your wife feel about that?
Well, early on. So now I have two kids. So my son is one and my daughter's three. So I try most of the time I can get done by like 5 o'clock and go home like a normal person. But there'll be some nights where I'll do the late night thing and stay up. But my studio is super close to home too. So I go home for lunch and see the kids. And so, yeah, I'm definitely in the studio. I think I'm around 150 songs for this next record. So yeah, definitely a lot.
And you're going to drop that down to 10.
Drop it down to 10. I think I'm trying to see if I can get to 15. I think it'd be good, but they all have to be like, what I loved about Trust Fall was it was, in my mind at least, it was all killer. Like, only one of the songs that I wanted to be on there. Like, I didn't want to like play around or anything. So if I can get this record to be the same, you know, have songs that I absolutely love, then if it's 15 songs, then 15, you know.
Well, what about the old ones? You're going to keep those.
Yeah. A lot of times I'll take a song that I wrote for another thing and then rework it for the next thing. So yeah, they don't go to waste, but most of them are not great.
You were talking about that Trust Fall album. We got to bring in another one. And this one is also with something I appreciate about how your songs are relatable, because at times we all feel like we're failing, and that's what comes out on In My Blood.
Mm.
Why don't you fill us in about that song?
Yeah. So I wrote at a sync camp. Sync is like TV and film. Mm-hmm. So we were writing music in particular for TV and film, see what we could do. And I remember we writing this song, and the song was kind of the opposite of what it is now. One of the lyrics was, it's the rush, it's the adrenaline, that's why I do it. You know, that was sort of the song.
Yeah, it's the very rock and roll thing.
Right. And then I remember in the right, I was like, what if it's not that? What if it's not the rush, it's not the adrenaline, it's in my blood. This, the reason I do it is it's because of who God made me.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all like, oh yeah, we like that. And that song went through a bunch of versions too. There's like probably six versions of that song, but that was fun to play live as well.
And how does the crowd react to that one?
They were jamming out to it. That's for sure.
Well, something else they're going to be loving is your wild voice. And because, and I say wild because it's so powerful. That's what first brought you to my attention. And that's not typical Christian music. Is belting out the lyrics something you've always done?
Early on, probably not as much. I think around probably 2017, I started doing that. And at first, well, no, I'd say even before that, maybe even like 2015, 2016, I was copying Bear Reinhardt from Need to Breathe. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
You're reading my mind. I was going to do a Bear Reinhardt comparison.
Yeah. And I literally did a carbon copy impression of his singing. And I remember I went to the studio with this producer and I sang for maybe 20 seconds and he stopped the track and was like, hey man, we already got one of them. We don't need two. Okay. So Yeah, I started forming my own voice, but I did notice the louder I sang, the more distorted and growly it would get. So it does that naturally. I just had to stop doing his mannerism, things like that.
I'm glad you're doing it your way, not Bette Reinhart's way.
Yeah.
So talking about your powerful voice, but you do tone it down on the song Find Some Peace of Mind, and that's also in Trust Fall. So then do you alter your vocal style depending on the song itself?
No, and we've talked about this a little bit, just like behind the scenes, like showing more parts of my voice.
Yeah.
Because I can turn it up to 120 and you know, scream the thing or growl the thing, but I can do this like falsetto thing and really soft thing that I'd love to hear, especially on Trust Fall. I was trying to have a couple songs where I'm not on stun the whole time, you know?
Not on stun. You put your phaser away.
Yeah.
Well, I think you probably thought I was never going to get around to asking about the latest EP, Change. That title track is awesome. It's about trying to change for the better in a spiritual sense. But you know, for me, as I get older, I find it difficult to change in any way. How about for you? Can you change your life?
Yeah, I think it's weird because I normally don't talk about this kind of stuff, but a lot of my issues that have to do with music industry stuff at that time when I wrote that song, I wrote it with a good friend of mine, Christian McLean, and we talked a lot about what people want you to change and for you to be something else. And also, when you want to change and be something else, I think a lot of the music I'm writing right now, it's not about being who the world wants you to be. It's not about being who you want to be, but being who God wants you to be, because that's true freedom. I don't want to change who I am. I don't want the world to change who I am. I want God to change who I am, because what he makes me into is going to be what truly makes life worth living. You know, when I say like the negativity of the music industry, it's not really the label, it's not managers. There's this sort of pressure sometimes that I think comes from good intentions. Somebody at a record label told me recently their job in their mind is to, first of all, make sure that the artist is loving the music they're making. And second, make sure it's heard by as many people as possible.
Right.
Which I was like, okay, that's what a label should do. That's awesome. And I think the second half of that, where it's like, get as many people to hear it as possible, there's pressure to compromise and make music that you don't love. So sometimes those things are competing. And I don't think they're doing it out of bad intent. I think they're just like, this is what they imagine the people want to hear. It's like, you should do that, you know, do what this artist is doing or do whatever. But in reality, it's not going to work because what that artist is doing is what's right for them. And that's why it's working. That's why it connects with people.
Well, I'm pleased with what I've been hearing.
Awesome. Very kind.
I think you and I need to close this up with what's my top pick from Change, which is Idols.
Okay.
And once again, it's powerful. I've been wasting time chasing after false gods. What I thought was light turned into a blind spot. Was that actually personal?
Yeah. I mean, I think we all do this. Whether it's something small like your cell phone or social media, or maybe it's, you know, money or, you know, a car. I think all of us make idols out of something. For me at that time, I think it was just important to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Just to say something kind of visceral, like kill my idols. I think that's the first thing I wrote. No, I made the track first, the sort of piano and then the post chorus where it goes surrender mine. But I think the first thing I sang into the microphone was kill my idols. And then I wrote it down. And I was like, okay, awesome. But that one has been crazy. Like, I remember the first time I played it live, and I never know like if people are going to sing it back to me live.
Mm-hmm.
But that one was like, oh my gosh, people are yelling this song at me. Like, they're louder than me. And I have a microphone and a loud voice. So yeah, seeing that one. And I think that the message is so important, especially nowadays. There's so many distractions and so many things that we could put ahead of God, or, you know, that are honestly destroying us.
Yeah. I get all that. But what about idolizing a singer? Somebody like Stephen Stanley.
Definitely don't idolize me. You should do the opposite of that.
Listen, Stephen, I want to thank you for this talk, and I'm going to be looking forward to that album when it comes out.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thank you for having me.